like that. Just like that. Just like that.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Coach's Box. It is a special, unusual Thursday night edition this evening. I've been sick earlier in the week, but I'm fighting fit now. And I hope Molly, who... my name is Monty, by the way. The other voice you're going to hear in this podcast is Molly. And I hope you're also fighting fit and your dream team and super coach have gone well this week, mate.
It was very nice this week. Although, I mean, I guess it was very nice, but on a big, big week. 2,276 in Dream Team, and I think I was in the top 500 order in Supercoach. Very unusual.
Now, well, there's a lot to get to this week. Obviously, being a Thursday show, that means that... I'm glad, actually, we delayed a day on this one, because the teams this week are very interesting and obviously have a lot of fantasy implications, more even than usual, because... Kevin Sheedy and Mark Williams in their wisdom and, of course, their love of screwing over fantasy coaches, which have proven themselves over many, many years. They've decided to do it again, with resting a whole bunch of giant kids who were very fantasy relevant. So there's a lot of things to get through this week. But I suppose before we get into the round review, Molly, there's a few things... we do have another sponsor this week. We'll do that just before we get. We'll do a little bit of stuff before then. But as I said, before we get to the round review, now we've been talking about plans and structures for getting your buys together, and I'm seeing a fair few coaches this week starting to panic a little bit. They're starting to think, you know. They're looking at their buys, and you're thinking, you know, maybe to minimum you can get donuts from the buys. Obviously, you have to eat at least two, due to the ruck situation and the way that the game is structured. I mean, obviously we have Aaron Stevenson coming back this week, so maybe he might avoid one donut. But I mean, it has been looking like Stevenson and Redden, who are most of the R3s and R4s on everyone's benches, they deliver us another couple of donuts. And then a couple of these giants, you know, with all these giants going down, or at least being rested this week, you can't rely on those guys either. How many donuts do you think is going to be normal for people coming through these buys? And I'm seeing some coaches say it's going to be so random that it's not even worth planning for at all. Is that an overreaction, do you think?
No, I'm starting to come down to that as well. Hi, everyone. I think that's starting to come down to it indeed. I'm trying to plan around it now and just trying to do it. It's really tricky. I think for some reason, and maybe it's just a perception thing, a lot of the players in the first round, it's not like the teams and their players have been evenly mixed with good backs and good forwards and good mids and good rucks. There seems to be a glut of good ruck options in the first in round 11, and not many backs and not many forwards amongst those sides. Some good midfielders you might want to pick up, but it's not looking good for those buy rounds. So, because I mean, you don't want to be trading out round 12 guys to round 13 guys, because that's just going to mean you're going to have to trade them out again the next week. So you really would like to trade a few of your round 12 guys to round 11. I think what you were referring to was there was a post in the famous DTS thread where they analysed how many points you would lose by taking more than the absolute, not chasing the minimum number of donuts you could by using all your trades to do so. And it really did come down to not a lot of gain for using a lot of trades.
Yeah, no, look, if we consider one trade in isolation, say if you had Shield this week, and I'm assuming you're not eating a donut for Shield this week. Let's say it was just on your bench, but you're looking at Shield versus or a Magna for instance, and you want to upgrade them to say a Murphy, like a Mark Murphy. So, is it worth holding on to that rookie for another 4 or 5 weeks until their bye? Or is it worth upgrading them now and eating the donut during the buy round? So the equation is, if you trade now, you get the advantage of Murphy's scores for, I think it is, 5 rounds before the buys over Shield or Magna, which you know, you'd say that maybe be 115 versus about 75, just to make up some numbers for the argument. So you'd be getting, what, about 200 points there. But you'd be getting that donut at the end of the at the buy period. So you'd be ahead 100 points there, but you'd only have one trade. Now, of course, you could use two trades. You could use the trade now to get Murphy in, and then also use a trade afterwards to sideways trade Murphy to someone else, assuming, of course, that, I mean, everything else being equal, you have to you know, sideways trade someone. Because a lot of people are using the likes of Magna in their centres, for instance, as the third of the round 12 players, and then trading him either up or down, you know, after round 12. So, I mean, if you've already got, say, Swan or Pendlebury, you've already got those are 12. So, I'm thinking of 13. So, if you've got, say, Ablett, actually, am I doing that right? Yes, yeah, because Carlton's around 13. So, if you've got Ablett and Horsley, for instance, so. So do you need to get Murphy in as well? I think I've got that right. Please stop me if I'm stuffing this up. I'm making up a little bit as I'll go along. But anyway, the theory is so it's that 200 points you've gained pre the buy round, but you do lose half of those when you eat that donut in the buy round. So it's a matter of weighing up whether how much a trade is worth, and whether you believe in Murphy maintaining his scoring all the way through that time, compared to whoever it is you could do trading out, Shield or Magna or McDonald or whoever it might be. So these are the trade offs I think you have to make, and there's some hard choices being made. And I think Molly, actually the correct decision is to upgrade now and eat that donut later, because you actually come out ahead, and you're going to use that trade anyway in the buy period. So it actually works out if it's like 200 before the buy period, and then you eat that donut. It actually works out that you're ahead trading now and then eating that donut.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case for our overall score. I guess the only thing the only reason why you might want to flatten out your score a bit would be if you're looking to stay alive in things like the Eliminator and that sort of thing. Or, that would be the main thing. The Eliminator could be the only thing that you might get some benefit evening out your score in that way.
Tilt Rays on the chat, says you've also got to factor in the likelihood of Murphy getting injured in those games. But then again, you've also got to do that for Shield or whoever it is you've kept. But then again, of course, if they get injured, then you can bring Murphy in after that. Of course, if you don't get him in, perhaps now or next week in particular, those low scores that are rotating through his price now are not going to be as make his price as tasty as it might be. But certainly, I think he's right on the roller coaster. He's going to be bottoming out in the next week or two. So that might be the sweet spot. Like, for instance, if we're talking specifically Shield to Murphy. This is actually a decision I have to make myself, Molly. Do I do that this week or next week? Because I'm not going to be eating a donut no matter which way I go. But do I get Murphy in this week? Because otherwise I'd have to start Magna. Do I take the probably 40 or 50 points that I'll be getting with from Murphy over Magna? Or do I take the extra $25,000 that Murphy is going to go down in price the next week, even though Shield isn't playing, given the break even situation, Murphy is going to go down by $20,000 to $25,000. Do I wait a week to get that $25,000? Is that worth it?
It is. Yeah, I mean, it could be. I mean, who's Magna got this week? So I mean, it does. It is. It probably is worth doing it this week.
Sydney,
and getting those extra points now. Yeah. So. It's probably worth getting those extra points now, although, you might decide that Magna in a Sydney game, I'm not sure there's too many backs that they would want to tag. You might play in the middle in a very stoppage-heavy game, which would really be right up his alley. He could score 100 this week, possibly. So, you know, there's that option there that you could be better off doing it that way, taking it this week.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there are risks either way you go. You know, Magna could be released from his stopping role and could, you know, and of course we know he can score hundreds. He can score like Barlow if he's released, but he's just not been released so far. He's been playing these roles. And who knows what's in the mind of Mark Neil. Yes, before we get to the mind of Mark Neil, Molly, of which I have a very strident opinion to relate to you just presently, I should say that, yes, no, we're not sponsored by Sports Deals this week. We are sponsored by a new sponsor, Cadbury Boost Bars. Now, I have a friend who is a school teacher, Molly, and she asked her school children to think up the first chocolate bar that came into their head. Now, the first chocolate bar apparently was not a Cadbury Boost bar. It was actually another Cadbury chocolate bar, which was... Actually, well, perhaps I should ask you that question, Molly. Now, of course, I'm mentioning Boost bar, but what would be the first chocolate bar that would come into your head if you said chocolate bar?
Mars bar.
Actually, it was Flake that she said. But anyway, the second one was apparently... This is completely coached by me, but the second one was apparently Boost Bar. It has been a decent campaign. I think the first one, wasn't there like an ad with a guy in a kilt on a hillside somewhere with like a massive like caber, and he was tossing the caber, and the caber was a big chocolate bar. Do you remember that ad campaign?
Don't remember that one.
Oh no, and he said, like he said, I'm gonna have to take my headphone off and do this from a distance, but you know, he'd like toss the caber and he'd say, "Boost!"
I think I do remember that one.
See now that you've got the oral clue, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Now, I believe they have a new campaign for it. I haven't actually seen it, but I'm sure you guys can see it online. Something about this, there's some dude and he's part of this new feature or wave or trend called, what is it called? Mooring? Is that
Mooring.
What it's called? Mooring. As in M-O-R-E-I-N-G.
See, this is what us Dream Team coaches live for, is mooring our points.
Exactly.
Mooring our premiums.
Very much so. I would like to moor my Dream Team and Supercoach course everywhere.
Mooring our trades, if we could.
Well, this is what I tweeted last week. I wasn't actually asking for mooring. I was thinking, you know, please can everyone just score what they scored last week and that'd be tickety-boo. But sadly, that wasn't the case. But, yes, look, everyone would like a bit of mooring, and I'm sure if you Google that word, M-O-R-E-I-N-G, you'll see what we're talking about. And there's this
dude. Or put it in YouTube. I actually checked it out last night, and there's a very interesting documentary-style two-minute piece on this guy who's very into mooring.
I believe it's shot in New York City. I can recall some of the skylines. Yes. Doesn't actually feature a whole lot of chocolate bars, but apparently it's all about chocolate bars. So I'm sure there's some sort of connection there. But certainly, have you ever actually had... Oh, no, oh, that's right. You actually had a chocolate bar there. Now, what happened to your chocolate bar?
It's a sad, sad story. I had it here ready for last night because I wanted to try it on air. I thought that would be really good.
Right.
I actually have had them once I realised which ones they are. They come in the Cadbury Favourites pack, and I love those ones because no one else normally takes them. I don't think people were onto how nice they are, the caramel and the nuts in them. And so I had one here ready to eat, and of course you weren't well, and we didn't have the show last night. So I came up to my room tonight, ready to do the show, and I'm looking for my chocolate bar, and it's gone. And my youngest son has eaten it on me. So I missed out, but he had it, and he did tell me he did enjoy it very much.
Well, I'm sure he got a boost, and he's been running around ever since.
He doesn't need a boost, though.
All right. Now, before we get on to the round review, there was one other thing I needed to mention. We're being a normal podcast here, people. This is what normal podcasts do. They have a few things to mention. Also, I haven't mentioned it. It's been on the site, on the front page of Fan Footy for a while now. There is a video feature on the front page of Fan Footy now, which features a weekly show. Is it a weekly show? I'm not sure. It might even be more
daily,
than weekly.
Is it daily?
Is it?
It's up and down, comes in and out.
That's the one. So it's called TSI, I believe, and it's hosted by none other than the inimitable Robert Walls, and there's a bunch. You'll see a bunch of stuff from Sky News Channel, but this is the star of the show. Yeah, TSI AFL. It's hosted by a lovely little Moppet down there. 3-minute show, so I'm not going to take up too much of your time. But if you scroll through the videos, you'll see TSI AFL, and that's the daily AFL wrap, which is under the Fan Footy AFL News on the front page. So that's the that's our commitments for the evening. Out of the way now, Molly. So you saw the Supercoach show this evening, and you know what I'm going to go with. Obviously, the start of the round review. We're talking about the Melbourne Hawthorn game. Tell me what you saw on the Supercoach show earlier this evening. We haven't even caucused about this. I'm sure you know where I'm going with this. Tell me what happened on the Supercoach. Tell everyone what happened on the Supercoach.
I didn't catch all of it. Are you speaking about the special guest?
The special guest they had, yes. And they asked him a particular question about my boy.
I didn't see that. You don't have to fill me in. I missed that bit. I didn't catch all of it.
Well, Jay Clark...
Carl Morton from Melbourne.
Yes. Now, Jay Clark from the Herald Sun was one of the panellists there, or at least the couch surfers. And Jay asked him a question, you know, why have we seen Tom Couch? He's been getting almost 30 touches every week in the VFL. Why haven't we seen him so far? And Carl Morton says, he sits back and says, well, you know, we've been looking for some consistency in his game. You know, he probably needs to string some games together. He needs to string some games together with consistency, Molly. Like there are several things wrong with this. What is 30 touches a game? Is that not consistent? I don't get that. And the second thing is, it's Carl Morton saying this. Carl Morton trying to tell someone to be consistent.
Come on, I think you're being very unfair for Kale. I think he is extremely consistent. He may be the most consistent man in the AFL.
He's
consistently inconsistent.
Exactly, yes. It just drives me batty. Kale Morton, lovely bloke. Obviously loves his fantasy media. He was a guest on that show. He's also one of the first guests that Footy Tragic had. Of course, Footy Tragic... Still yes. going now on Channel 31. I believe they have a show tonight, actually.
Yes, they would, yes.
So, yeah, look, I'm a big supporter of fantasy football, but just, you know, how can he be lecturing a kid about consistency? Come on, Kale. That's just beyond the pale. Kale, sorry. Go on.
I was just saying, he's in the AFL to be an example of what not to do.
Yeah. Well, you could argue that's the whole Melbourne Football Club at the moment. Yes. I'm being a bit nasty, I realise. And Melbourne fans out there, you know, long-suffering Melbourne fans as they are.
The papers brought out the fact that Melbourne, you know, want to get Jack Viney, and they're likely to have a high pick. They're going to have to worry about Gold Coast and GWS having a pick before them. And I don't know whether it's known by everyone, but they've also, in the Scully trade, one of their picks was a first-round pick after their own first-round pick.
Mm.
So let's say they came third last this year. They've already activated. They would get the third and the fourth pick in the draft.
Yeah.
Right? Now, the problem is, what if Gold Coast or GWS say, yes, we would like to have Jack Viney?
Mm.
They would have to use the third pick to get him.
Mm.
But let me put this thought in your mind, Monty. What if they came last?
Mm.
What if they came stone motherless last this year?
Mm.
Which isn't too far out of the realms of possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Not only would they get pick one and pick two, but they would also, possibly, I'm not sure, I think the priority picks were canned, so they wouldn't get one after the second round. But with their second round pick, they could pick Jack Viney.
Mm. This is a terribly egregious stain on Melbourne's character that you're putting on them. But unfortunately, that is the reality at the moment. If the season stopped now, Todd Viney. Jack Viney would be going for pick 19, as Tilt Razor reminds us in the chat.
So instead of getting Jack Viney and pick 4 and pick 22 or higher, they would get pick 1, pick 2, and Jack Viney.
Look, I mean, I'm not at this point subscribing to the theory that Mark Neal has been told to tank. I don't believe that.
How can you explain him not playing Tom Couch then?
Well,
you're not.
look, I don't think he has earned anyone's respect as an AFL coach at this level yet, and it may be. I mean, he hasn't proved to anyone, me included, that he can coach yet. Obviously, there are some deliverables, there are some intangibles, well, not intangibles, there are some tangibles that obviously someone's writing down on a bit of paper that Tom Couch is not delivering on in the VFL. And obviously Neild has a list of things that he needs his players to do, and for whatever reason, Tom Couch has not ticked all the boxes yet. Those 30 touch, I mean, he has shown every sign, and possibly is the coach least interested in possession statistics that we've ever seen. And he is a freak in terms of modern coaches. He does not care. He does not seem to care about winning the ball. I mean, it's almost as if he's. I think I might have said this a week or two ago. It is almost as if he's saying, "Let's treat this game as match practice, boys. Let's give the other team the ball and work on our defensive skills." That is almost the way he's been treating these games, because he's treating the defensive side of the game more important to the development of the players than actually winning the ball and trying to win the game. Now, is that tanking? I don't think that's actually tanking. I think he's trying to build a defensive mindset in the club, but the fact that he hasn't picked Tom Couch tells me that he's trying to do things other than win at the moment. Now, that is not. I don't think that's tanking, that he's trying to teach them. But at some point, he's going to have to turn that around. Now, Dean Bailey never managed that. He wasn't quite as strident as Neild has seemed to be, but he made similar noises, not as loud as Neild has, made similar noises at the start of his reign, and he couldn't turn the corner. He couldn't flip the script and say, right, boys, let's try to win the game now, and they wouldn't listen to him eventually. Now, I'm not sure. I haven't seen yet. It's probably too early to tell. But I haven't seen Neild try to win a game yet. And maybe when he does pick Tom Couch, maybe that's when they'll start to try to win. But at the moment, it's just not happening. It's just not happening on a scoreboard point of view. It's happening in a bunch of boxes that the coaches are ticking up in the box, which are not related to winning the game. And it's like they're rebuilding all over again. Now, maybe they needed to. Maybe the list was such a basket case and the back room was such a basket case that then they needed to throw everything away and start again. But that's what they've done. And that's why Tom Couch is not playing, evidently. So, anyway. That is my rant about that out of the way, because he is my boy, and I haven't seen him, and I want to see him. So, and he's still in my Supercoach team. Mouldering away.
There is an argument to say, apart from the poor, what word are we using? Mongrels, who have got him in the team like you and Supercoach.
Those poor mongrels, yes.
The rest of us, it's actually going to be better for us if he doesn't surface until around the bye rounds.
Yeah, well, okay, so, no, well, the serious fantasy question here, those of us who do have him on our benches, is it so late in the piece that... we can't wait for him now to play, because I mean this is probably the last opportunity we're going to have to make a legitimate sideways trade to a rookie who's going to be playing. Possibly last week might have been the last opportunity. There are still a couple coming through. We'll talk about it from the St Kilda game, where you can probably be assured that they'll actually play enough games to be a cash cow. So is this the very last train that's getting off for the Tom Couch bandwagon?
I think it's horses for courses type of thing, but for me, there's three rounds of action before the bye round start. So if you picked the round 13 one to replace him, you would have, what's that, five rounds. So enough for a cash cow to make some money and for you to get rid of him. But I mean, I think that because of the potential that we see in Couch and the fact that you're going to have to make trades around the bye rounds anyway, I think you're going to be, unless you need to cover a donut, I think you're almost better off just hanging on to him and wearing the fact that you're not making any cash out of that position and hoping that each week that you that he finally does whatever he needs to do, and I listen to your rant and I take it all to heart, but I would suggest the only thing he's not doing is sucking, which seems to be a prerequisite for playing in that Melbourne side. So maybe he'll turn around and do whatever he needs to do.
Yes, well, I wasn't going to be that blunt, Molly, but you're obviously free to express your opinion on that. But anyway, now before we get off Melbourne, and I'm sure their fans are willing to get off them now, just quickly on James Magner. There's no sign of him being freed up, so we just have to assume he's going to keep on playing these lockdown roles, at which he's doing a decent job. But I suppose it does look to me like the structure for your midfield, going in with Magner as the round 12 mid that you then go through round 11 with, and then trade after round 11, and then Horsley as the mid who you trade after round 12, because obviously he's got a round 13 bye. That seems to me to be the most, the default format for structuring your centres, with obviously the 2-3-3. So you have two round 11 either premiums or GWS, blokes who are scoring like premiums. So you might have a Coniglio or a Green, plus a Boyd or a Rockliffe or a Thompson, and those are your two round 11 ones. And obviously round 12s, you might have Swan or Pendlebury, whoever. And then you might have Murphy and Mitchell, or obviously Ablett, or would be the other one that a lot of people would still have. And then obviously Magner and Horsley. So that seems to me to be the default choice of people for structuring that midfield. So I suppose with Magner, with that structure, you don't have to play him unless, of course, some of these giants start disappearing like they are this week. How do you think Magner's score is going to go through that bye period? I think you're only going to have to start him once in that round 11 game. Is his price going to top out before that and then drop precipitously, or can you rely on his price to sort of coast in to that bye period?
No, I think he's going to do all right. I mean, even with the tagging jobs he's been doing, he's still been scoring, above 60 each week, except for, he's been pretty much scoring above 60. He's averaging 78. Might drop off a little bit. He's got a break even this week of 46. Should do that on, standing on his head even against Sydney. As I say, he could have a good one against Sydney. He could tag
Kennedy,
which means he would see a lot of opportunities to get the ball.
Yep.
I think it's right to hold him for a bit longer and, as you say, keep him for the bye rounds and get rid of him during the bye rounds.
It was interesting. There has been a fair bit of tagging of inside mids this year, and they have tended to go forward. And I think Kennedy himself might have done that during the Adelaide game, I think it might have been.
Yeah.
I can see Magner, doing fairly well as a halfback flanker, yep, running off Kennedy. So, yeah, absolutely. Well,
the thing about Kennedy, though, and this is sort of going sideways, is that he is, I remember from a kid when he turned up at Hawthorn and the family days, he is huge across the shoulders.
Mm.
Which means I think he can play okay as a forward. I mean, if you think of his dad was a key position back.
Yeah.
So, and he's been a goal-kicking midfielder going forward. So that could be a worry for Magner, but, yeah, I think he can go with him anyway.
Yeah, well, I can certainly see Kennedy interchanging with the likes of Bolton in that, or even O'Keefe in that forward line and creating havoc. But certainly Magner, I don't think Magner's scoring is going to be affected by that. Right, on the Hawthorn side, Molly, there's a fair bit of Hawk talk tonight because there are obviously the Hawk... draw tends to open up after this. Obviously, they had a very tough first 5 or 6 weeks of the season. And after beating the Saints, and obviously the Melbourne stroll was the first part of their easier middle third. Obviously, building up to a slightly harder finish. But I am faced this week in Supercoach with a choice, and I think even someone who was, I think it might have even been Green, the Green, the ex-Hawthorn player, who am I thinking of here?
Stevie Green,
yes. I'm thinking of two. There's too many greens around in fantasy football at the moment. Sorry, Stevie, but Stevie Green. He mentioned this as well. That there's a choice between Grant Birchall and Matt Suckling. Now, before we start this conversation, Molly, I know you're down with the hierarchy down there at Hawthorn, and not only that, you're also down with the hierarchy down at some of these Hawthorn fan blogs or fan forums. And I have heard there's a bit of a whisper about a long-term injury coming up to one of the Hawthorn stars. Can you shed any light on this before we start? Because this has coloured a bit of my thinking. I've heard about this rumour. Can you shed any light on who this is? Or because apparently there's been rumours.
The manufacturer one.
Yeah. Yeah. Haven't you heard this one yourself?
Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, no. I've heard there's someone else who's not carrying like a short term thing. I mean, I'm thinking it might be Cyril with his osteitis pubis. I mean, he certainly has been walking around and you know acting like he does have something more long term. I mean, do you know anything about some of these players who are fantasy relevant who are you know going to get shut down for the season for any reason?
Shut down for the no, I can't. I have no idea where you're going.
Mm. But you did know what I'm talking about. There was a thread on one of these. No? No? Okay, all right. Fine, your secret's safe with you. That's absolutely fine. Okay, anyway, well...
I wish it was a secret. No, I've got absolutely no idea who
you're
talking about.
Sure, yes, absolutely. No, you're not hiding anything from me. That's fine. Fine. Right, Birchall and Suckling, Molly. So, there's no reason to text me about it, Molly. I don't know either. So it's not as if I'm verbaling you about who it is.
Rumors around on radio that Hodges is got a back problem, and that's the reason, and it's not really a knee, or he's got osteitis pubis or whatever, and that he's the problem. But I haven't heard of anyone else.
Perhaps you need to spend more time down on that couch down at.
I haven't really got down to training at all this year.
Right, okay, so the choice, as I said, between Birchall and Suckling is an upgrade target. I mean, obviously a lot of people will be thinking of upgrading Ellis or Townsend or Bug, obviously, would be the other big one this week. And they might be looking at a round 12 back who they haven't already got. You know, I always get these things mixed up. So Hawthorn is actually around
13.
Yes, so they're looking for 13. So a lot of people would already have Goddard and Delidio, of course, and they might have Scotland. So, but I mean, if you don't have Scotland, you might be a little bit out of reach at the moment. So Birchall and Suckling are very much within reach. Birchall obviously coming off a bit of an injury. Suckling obviously hasn't been scoring all that well lately, but in that game against Melbourne. Had a very good junk time, second half of that game, and you would think that there'd be a lot of junk time coming up in a lot of these Hawthorn games coming up, because they do have a soft draw, and Suckling has shown, not only this year, but also last year, he can absolutely be king of junk time when he wants to be. So, which of these two would you choose if you had to have a choice, Molly? Grant Birchall or Matt Suckling?
It's a tough choice. I think either of them are fine. I mean, Birchall's might be down a bit further this year because of coming back from that injury and being subbed out in the game that he got injured in. He was on the way. He was on 82 at three-quarter time and got subbed out and then came back with a 60. So then he had 100 on the weekend. So he's got a break even still at 100.
He's one of the players. Slightly. Yeah. So just to... That is the almost the definition of being at the bottom of the roller coaster. And there is a feature on the front page of Fan Footy. If you mouse over Fan Tools, there's a link to the roller coaster in both Dream Team and Supercoach, where it shows you where people have their prices have topped out and where their prices have bottomed out. So Birchall is one of those players whose prices bottomed out, and it will be going up from here, I think. Or at least it won't be going down any further.
Yeah. No. So I mean. Suckling's got a break even of 71. He had a big game on the weekend, 127. I mean, I think either of these guys are fine. I mean, it's toss 'em. I mean, at the start of the year, I was worried about Suckling, about his job security. But I mean, the Hawks have never got their full side together, and he's shown that you know he's going to hang on to that spot. I mean, I made the wrong call there. I thought he might play forward a bit more, but that hasn't happened. So I can't see that happening now, although With Gibson, this week will be interesting with Gibson coming back, Gillen being in the side, still got Shoemakers and Stratton, how they use Birchall and Guerra and him and Burgoyne. So you think one of them is going to have to move forward to cover Osborne. So, you know, it's going to be tricky which one that is. It could be Burgoyne, who has done it before. He started off last year quite well. He was towards the top of the goal-kicking list, in fact, early last year.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure. We'll talk about Osborne in a minute, actually. But I would have thought the important in for the Hawks, as far as Birchall and Suckling goes, is actually Gillam, because he obviously strengthens up that tall defence. So you've got Gillam and Stratton and Shoemakers. So Birchall doesn't need to play tall.
Correct.
Suckling doesn't necessarily need to have a bloke at all. And you know that they can both freewheel, so I think that's great for them. I mean, there weren't a whole lot of positives for either side in that game on Friday night. Let's be honest. The two for Hawthorn, I think someone mentioned on Footy Classified, Clinton Young was a plus, yes, but I think Gillam I think was the main plus that he got through absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean that's what I'm saying though is that you know if you look at the four taller backs of Gillam, Shoemakers, Gibson and Stratton, then there's only other two spots in the back six.
Yep.
Now you think one of them is Guerra, so Birchall and Suckling may move between them. But there's also the thought that early on in the preseason, Suckling played a little bit off the half forward flank.
Mm.
Now the question is, if he plays off the half forward flank, is that good for him or bad for his scoring?
I could see Suckling.
I think it could be bad.
I could see Suckling playing wing. You know, there have been backs who've been playing wing. Henderson's been doing a bit of that, or maybe I'm thinking about last year. I think actually the bloke who's a Hawk now, of course, used to play for Adelaide, Gunstall.
Gunstall.
Yes, I think he played off a wing a fair bit last year as well. So
I mean, I could see Birchall moving into the midfield a little bit more as well. I mean, with his run, I mean, a lot of the talk of Hawthorn is how slow they are in the midfield. So adding a Birchall to the midfield adds a lot of pace and dash and a defensive mindset as well.
Now, I did notice in the emergencies this week, both Tom Murphy, your boy, and also also Xavier Ellis, are they any closer? I mean, do they need an injury for them to come into the side?
Yeah, I think the thought with Murphy is that he needs an injury to one of those back fours to get in. I mean, I think the thought was with the strength of that back line being the offensive strength of the back line, let's call it. I mean, you know, it is debatable and probably a little bit of truth in the fact that they're not good against the high ball.
Mm.
But the thing they are good at is ground level, and all six of the guys named in the back line are great users. I mean, I think Stephen Gillam is underrated for how good a user he is. He's not going to cut you to pieces as a creative ball, but when he kicks it, it finds a target.
Yeah, I think we're getting a little bit of self-indulgent with Hawk Talk here, Molly. I think when you start talking up Stephen Gillam's kicking. Anyway, we do have a few Hawks still left to talk about. Now, I have been making I've been looking at, as I said before, at the Shield to Mark Murphy trade, but when you look at Mark Murphy, he seems to be a player that not a whole lot of people have at this point and are looking at. Because, of course, he has had a couple of bad games in a row. So his price has gone down somewhat. But you look at that price range, and just a few, I think it's about 20 or 30,000 less, is Sam Mitchell. Now, I see Murphy's ceiling, or at least I did see Murphy's ceiling as being higher than Mitchell's, prior to this phenomenon of Murphy being tagged and Carlton losing. Which obviously they did. Now, we're not necessarily going to talk about Murphy here, but I mean, can you make a case for Mitchell averaging 110 to 115 for the rest of the season, given that he's not done that, obviously, to the season to date? His price is about as low as it's going to be, you would assume, because of that 60 odd from the Sydney game a couple of weeks ago has rotated its way through his price, Mitchell's price now. So if you're going to get Mitchell, now is the time to get him. How close does he get to that 115 range which you need to get into to the top six midfielders?
Well, I mean, from this point on, very, very good, I think. Mm. I mean, he's, as you say, the 63, if you haven't got him, you don't have to worry about, and you're getting the benefit of the price drop from it. So I think he's good to get that score. I mean, he's got his little buddy there now, Shields. So, you know, and Sewell's coming back into a bit of form. So, you know, it's going to be a case of him probably still getting the first tag until Hodge gets back. But he's capable of scoring very well in that midfield, and especially with the teams that he's got coming up.
Now, in that specific trade, Shield to, you know, Murphy or Mitchell, I mean, there are arguments for waiting a week on that trade. And, so, I mean, another part of that argument is, I would like to see Murphy actually, you know, because he's had two games with that tag, and I'd like to see him, you know, actually break it for once in 3 weeks. And the other part of that, of course, is that the Hawks have Freo this week, and Ryan Crowley has actually been a fairly effective tagger this week, this year. He hasn't had a huge amount of success in previous years, but he seems to have improved his fitness this year, and he's doing some pretty good jobs. Do you see Mitchell, you know, suffering under the tag of Crowley like he did, obviously, in that Sydney game a couple of weeks ago?
Well, I mean, he could. I mean, in just looking at the historical, you know, how well he scored against Fremantle, he's got a plus 13 on his average. So that would suggest that maybe he's not going to be that badly affected. And the other thought is that Crowley sometimes does a forward tagging role, and he could have to, a tagging on the small defender, and he may have to do that on Rioli this week, so Rioli doesn't cut them to pieces.
Actually, I think I heard Ross Lyon at the press conference saying Broughton, what's his name?
Mr. B.
Mr. B is actually the bloke who sat on Rioli last time they played, so that actually might be the job that happens. And I don't think...
That would be right.
And Crowley has actually been doing tagging roles in midfield this year, not in...
Yeah. So, I mean, Crowley, I've got a lot of respect for him as a tagger, so yes, there is a chance he could do the job this week on Mitchell.
All of these things tell me that that Shield to the round 12 premium can wait a week. This is what this is all telling me. All right, now the final Hawk I wanted to talk about, of course, was Jordan Lewis. Now, you mentioned Osborne there before. He, of course, is going to have a traditional ACL reconstruction. Just looking at Lewis's scores this year. Now, you'll have to tell me, I can't recall off the top of my head exactly how much of his game has been played forward and how much in midfield, but I'll look at his numbers this year compared to last year, and his numbers are a lot smoother this year than they were last year. Surprisingly, at pretty much exactly the same average, certainly in Dream Team, you know, of 89 average, exactly the same as it was last year, but pretty much all of his scores have come in within that 80 to 100 range, whereas last year his standard deviation was a lot higher. And when he did those forward tagging roles, his scoring suffered, and he pulled a couple of sub 50s and a couple of, you know, 50s and 60s, and then he get released and he score 120s and 130s. None of that this year. His scoring seems to have been very flat in a narrow range. So, what can you tell me about Lewis's role and how it's changed this year to cause that strange phenomenon of his numbers?
Oh, I think he has played a lot more in the midfield this year than he has as he did last year. So that would be the thing that would explain it to me. And I mean, as I said to you before the show, the Hawks have been very good at converting inside 50s into scoring shots. So he's been a beneficiary of that. He can play forward and score. So he's been playing more high half forward when he's up forward rather than deep full forward or forward pocket that he has in the past with rough head back. He hasn't needed to do that as much.
So with the with Osman going down, do you see Lewis as moving into that role, or how does that work with, well, obviously Popolo and Rioli, the other two small forwards? Who's the third, and is it Bruce the third one now? How does that work?
Yeah, so I mean, Bruce has been playing that role as well, and Osborne's been more the high half forward as well. I mean, you know, going down to the back line to bring the ball up the wing. So,
but isn't there white cross? You can't have three high half forwards. I mean, or can you? I suppose you can these days, can't you?
Yeah, everyone's a high half forward.
Indeed.
So. I think he will. He'll change on the ball, you know,
So now, you mentioned that before about Mitchell having his little middlemate Shields. This is perhaps a bit of an underreported aspect of Hawthorn's year, that Shields and Savage have had sort of slow starts to the year. I think they might have had some injury affected pre-season. So how does that affect the mix there?
I don't know about Savage. I think he's played just about every game, but Shields definitely missed. I think his first game was the West Coast game, or maybe it was the Sydney game. So, that's affected things and meant that, you know, he hasn't been around. And then, you know, he played against Sydney and they got smashed in the second half. He played okay in West Coast, but I mean, he really returned against St Kilda and against, Melbourne on the weekend. I would love to have I've already got a couple of round, well, I actually don't. I could do with another round 13. I'd love to have the guts to pick him because I think he's a great player, but I'm probably getting a few too many Hawks in my side. I think he can do very well.
Mm. All right. Well, those two went on the running sheet, but yes, Hawk Talk went a bit over this week because I think we missed out on a couple of weeks ago. But anyway, we should get on to the battle of the babies, the war of the Wiggles, Western Sydney versus the Suns. Now, of course, this is the big selection news of the week, Molly. So I think there were five changes, but the four we're interested in are the big outs of Thomas Bugg, Adam Kennedy, Dylan Scheel, and Devin Smith. Now, how many of those four do you trade out now? And how many of those can you rely to play through the buys?
Well, that's a very interesting question.
Just to clarify, so Bug and Scheel and Smith were all listed as rested, whereas I think Kennedy was listed with an injury of some description. It might have been a shoulder.
Okay. So Bug rested, Shields rested, Smith rested, Kennedy shoulder.
Yep.
You're probably going to move one or of them out, you know, because you are, as has been written in a lot of the commentary this week in the fantasy type articles, it is time to start upgrading players. So, you know, these guys are guys you're going to have to upgrade. I mean, we've probably had a glut of Greater Western Sydney players in sides, so it's time to start diversifying a little bit.
Okay, how about I'll give you my thoughts on these four. So I think Bug, I heard someone say this week in one of the articles, it might have been on one of the, like, Footy Tragic or someone, it might have been on the Freako newsletter, I think it might have been, that Bug out this week, you can't rely on him necessarily as your B7, your seventh back. Now, I never saw him as a B7. He's averaging 70 to 75. That is not a B7 to me. That is a B8 at best, and that is where I'd put him as of last week in my structure, and I'm happy with him staying there. And if you're relying on him as your B7, you might need to rethink that, I think. You may disagree with me, or you may think that he's still got a lot left in the tank, but I think he's only a B8 at this stage if you're going to keep him. And I think he's perfectly fine there, especially if you're going to, you know, sideways trade him after round 11 for buy reasons. Absolutely, there's nothing wrong with that at all. Kennedy, I think, has run his race. He's fodder. You probably should have traded him out already, I think, for a Treloar or an Adams. But I certainly have, and I don't have any regrets about that decision. Scheel, I think he's for the chop this week. He's the low man on the totem pole. Although there's a man I haven't got on the sheet there, but we should mention in a minute in relation to Scheel. But just to finish that out on Devin Smith, I think we can keep Devin Smith until the buys, and he can be the one we can decide by his trade. For those people who still have him in, I've already gotten rid of him for Adams, I think, one of those. I'm happy with that. But for people who still have him, I think it's going to be fine. He's only going to be rested. He'll be back, and he'll be scoring slightly less than acceptable starting numbers. But you might only lose 10 or 20 points a week, and that's acceptable up until the buys to save a trade. So. The other bloke who didn't get named again this week was James McDonald in relation to Dylan Scheel. So I guess the question is, do you trade out Scheel or McDonald? So the McDonald story, very frustrating, Molly, because he only played two games after coming over off the bubble. So I think Sheedy has been quoted. I read somewhere this week that Sheedy has been quoted as saying McDonald's only going to play 7 or 8 games, which is a bit of a worry. So he's only played the 4 this week. I mean, is he only going to play 3 or 4 in the second half of the year? Can we rely on him playing through the buys? These are all very worrying developments as far as I'm concerned. And I would hope that he'd be named next week. Otherwise, he might be the one for the chop. And maybe it's Scheel is the one we should be keeping. It's a very fraught situation for me.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I've got a good midfield of young guys. So I've got, before this round, I had Scheel. I'm actually going to trade him out. I've got Magna, I've got Horsley, and then I've got Caliglio and McDonald. So at this point, my thought was I was going to hang on to McDonald because if he does play another couple of games, his price will soar.
Mm.
I don't need him on the ground this week. I don't even need him as an emergency this week. So with the trades I've made,
yeah.
So I'm going to wear him on the bench for the moment and hope that he's still got a price rise or two in him. Now, if you haven't got anyone else, if you've already got rid of Shields and you've got, let's say, Magna and Horsley, or Magna and Horsley and Caliglio and McDonald as your 4 at the start of this week, and you want to make an upgrade, then yeah, he's probably the guy you would move, being that he's not playing and the prospect of him playing is a bit up and down, and we're not really sure what's going to happen with him.
Yes, Jazzo7 in the chat. Can you read that what Jazzo7 is saying in the chat there for me, Molly?
Oh, I don't know. He's
is Molly saying Mr. Caniglio C. or Caliglio?
Mr. I think C, he'll be for me.
Mr. C, that's right. Cogs, just calling Cogs, yeah, like everyone else does.
Cogger, yes. Salad, as they said before.
That's right.
The guy said salad.
Yes, and it's not because he's. Yes, no, it's because of his hairstyle, apparently. Yes.
Number 2.
Mm. Now, of course, just in passing to round out the Western Sydney talk, we talked in the pre-season about whether it was the correct choice to choose Hargrave or Lake, and then it ended up being that you had to choose both. That would have been the right decision. And I think the same thing, we were agonising after round 2 about the Green versus Caniglio battle, and it turns out you should have got both of them. So, I mean, unfortunately, you might have eaten a donut in that Adelaide game because they both missed that game, but certainly at the moment they're both going great guns and neither of them have been rested, and they're both looking like they're going to power through to the bye at this stage. So,
I mean, just to go back a step, that's where the McDonald thing is really annoying because, I mean, McDonald was, in many ways, the choice to get McDonald is 100% right choice.
Mm.
And in many ways, it was 100% wrong choice because he was always going to miss some games, you know, rested. The suspension came at a bad time. He probably would have played an extra at least one game if he had have not had that suspension. And it's a tough choice. I mean, he's putting on money and he's scoring well. I mean, he's scoring, for an early season midfield 6, he would be a great early season midfield 6. He is, gold midfield 6, but he's just not playing, and that's unfortunate.
Tilt Raising the chat raises the point. Ellis and Morris, same thing, absolutely. Yep, can't disagree with that. Alright, on the Gold Coast side, Molly, now, of course, we don't need to talk about Kyle Horsley. Everyone's got him. Everyone's enjoying him. Lovely, lovely judgment.
I would say, though, if you don't have him, history says...
Why not?
Well, A, why not? B, is it too late? No, it's not too late. This guy is a Jet. He is scoring well. He seems like he'll continue to score well. I think a few years ago, wisdom was, if you miss that first big price rise, don't go for it. But it's not out of the question that he could be still an okay guy to pick up, although, you know, putting on 90K does hurt, missing out on that.
In the immortal words of Jerry Harvey, if you're not buying Kyle Horsley, ask yourself why. Why not? Yes, I think that was his considered opinion on the matter. Yes, now, well, I didn't want to talk about Kyle Horsley, but I did want to talk about the two blokes who've stepped up in the absence. Or, now, of course, Ablett was there on the weekend, but we didn't get the full Ablett in that game. The two blokes who have stepped up in those two games where we haven't got... And obviously, Riscatelli is not at his best either. Have been Dion Prestia and Sam Iles, two big 120s from both of them in those two games. Now, this is something which we talked about a week or two ago, Molly, about the prospect of doing a temporary trade, of picking up someone who was underpriced and maybe getting them rid of them through, with the understanding that you would get rid of them through the buys. Now, Prestia and Iles are about the same price, they're sort of mid-350s odd. Now, can you see them backing those numbers up? Because, I mean, if you get sort of... There's five games, isn't it? Is it five or six games until round 13 now?
Five. 5 weeks. Yep.
No, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah, 5 weeks. So if you can buy them for a price of about 70 and then get them producing, say, hundreds out of that, I mean, that's a big bonus in terms of value for money, and you can make that sideways trade. So, I mean, people might have been thinking of getting Ablett back in, in between times. Can you see people going for Prestia or Iles instead, or do you see that as a very temporary phenomenon that Ablett's going to go back to his old ways, and Prestia and Iles are going to go back to their old ways?
Oh, I could see it absolutely. I mean, they played two good side. I mean, they played Fremantle, a good side, and then Western Sydney. So, you know, they've got a pretty fair run. They've only got the only really, really tricky game you'd put in there is that Collingwood game. Although, you know, playing the lower sides, they're going to be switched on against them. So, or let's not call them lower, let's call them the second tier sides. You know, that could affect them, but, you know, it's something that they're still going to score okay, I think. I'm not sure I would be expecting 120, but 100 isn't out of the question for these guys, especially now that Swallow's down injured, so there's going to be more midfield time. Riscatelli hasn't come back as well as you would like for him. I guess the only question is, you know, there's a few other guys coming back into the side, Stanley for one, and Andrew McWalter's been brought off the rookie list, so bit more competition in that sense.
But I mean, Riscatelli looks like he's not back to form, and obviously Ablett's on one leg at the moment, and Brennan obviously out of that side this week. So yeah, they're struggling for numbers down there. So just a matter of whether you can think those younger bodies Presti's pretty well. You know, well, they do call him the meatball after all, so he is a bit built fairly well, and you'd think he'd have a bit of stamina and be able to hit, you know, and not be broken in those packs. And the same thing with Iles, I suppose, at this stage of his career. But it's a worry. I made a sideways trade, half sideways, to go with McCarthy for about four or five weeks, and that ended up being okay. I can't say it was a world beater. I can't say, you know, it was the reason that I'm ranked, you know, 2500 or something. But McCarthy didn't necessarily let me down. He didn't hugely impress me, but that might be the you know, buying Prestia or Iles for a price of 70 odd, you might not necessarily, I mean, you're not going to get 120s every week, but you might get a 90, and that might be worth it for a while, and then you offload them again in that buy period, and it might work out. So certainly that's a calculated risk, but certainly is one that has some upside. Right, now the next game is the Adelaide versus Geelong game. Don't know whether you watched this, Molly. This is for a Hawthorn supporter. It was mildly enjoyable. But it was sort of therapy. But I mean, that wasn't Geelong out there though. It was a very weird game. Just Adelaide.
I was watching. My boys, or at least my eldest, wanted to watch the Gold Coast GWS. So we watched that one. It was a pretty good game.
Yes, indeed. We'll talk about Josh Jenkins next week when he's on the bubble, presumably. But I guess the question for me from this Adelaide game is, even in a massive victory like this was, Paul Pleasure still trudging along at sort of mid-70s, and that's about his average, and that's about what he's scoring. And of course, that, I mean, if you're expecting Paul Pleasure to be, this is obviously the same thing with Bug, I don't see Paul Pleasure's average as being an F7. I see that as being an F8. So, I'm not sure if you are planning on upgrading enough so that Paul Pleasure can be your F8, but, I think that's the only role you can really realistically, have for him, and thus, it is almost tempting. Like, I mean, this week I was only planning that one trade, and I may even hold off on that one. So, I do have a bit of cash about, and a lot of people do. It is tempting to, you know, go from a Paul Pleasure up to a side bottom, or if you're looking for an 11, around 11 forward, maybe even a Dangerfield, or, well, actually, there's not a huge amount of around 11 forwards, let's be honest, but that's almost part of the problem, because a lot of people are carrying the likes of Smith and Adams and Treloar and Dixon, and they've already got too many round 11 forwards, and they're trying to cut down. And instead of cutting down on those giants, who haven't obviously topped out on their scores, especially the likes of Adams and Treloar, who still have a lot of rounds to go on the roller coaster before they hit the top, it's tempting to actually upgrade Paul Pleasure instead of those guys at this stage, Molly.
Yes, it is. Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a valid move as well. I mean, he's leveled out. He's putting up, you know, pretty much an average with not much deviation, so around the 70 mark. So I mean, at this point in the season, that's handy in the forward seven spot. But I mean, you would like to get him out soon for something more. But I mean, if you're moving on your giants, then you know having Paul Pleasure there is helpful as well in balancing out. The you know, a guy who could play through the other two buy rounds as a decent score as well. But I mean, yeah, I'd like to try and get him to my bench if I can. Mm. You know, in the mix of things, and hold on to him and get him to the bench. But it's just going to be a matter of what happens with those other rookies.
Yeah. All right, on the Geelong side now, I've heard. Might have even been Dr. Dream Team might have advocated getting in Corey Enright. Actually, might have a Freako might have mentioned that this week. However, we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, and certainly this is a new development in the Corey Enright story is for fantasy this week. Not only did the Adelaide coach, ex Geelong assistant coach Brenton Sanderson, he put a forward tag on Mackie, but he also put one on Enright, and both of them had numbers well down on their averages, and that ended up being a big determinant in Adelaide smashing Geelong all about the park in that game. Now, if an insider in the Geelong machine that has steamrolled the competition for the last 5 or 6 years decides that putting forward tags on their halfback flankers is the way to beat Geelong, surely then other coaches are going to twig on this, and a player like Enright, who is fantasy relevant, is all of a sudden not going to become very fantasy relevant, Molly. I mean, are you on board with this one?
Yeah, I mean, I needed to bring in a round 12 buyer this week in my back line, and he's one I considered. I mean, he's at a juicy price. I mean, he's dropped 90K, and, you know, he had 106 the week before, and a 92 and an 80 and some 70s in there. But it is a bit of a worry to have the two, you know, 60 to sub 60 mark performances against the Lions and Adelaide, and you've also got a 62 against Hawthorn and a 38 against Freo. So, you know, it's a bit of a worry, and the draw opens up a tad after this. They're going to get the Gold Coast and the Western Sydney and Port Adelaide in the next 7 games. But, yeah, I mean, he worries me, his performances this year, so I'm probably going to avoid him as juicy as he looks.
Mm. And it was noticeable in that game that, of course, Billy Smets had his, I think it might have been his best game of the season, but of course now he's got dropped. And if you're looking for any reasoning for that, you might only need to look at, of course, this is your old sore, Molly, of looking at the comparative numbers between the Supercoach and the Dream Team, which I'd imagine would be related to disposal efficiency, 77 in Dream Team and 58 in Supercoach. And, of course, it was actually Cameron Guthrie, another fantasy rookie, who ended up being the loose man with those two halfback flankers manned up for the Cats. And he just couldn't find the ball at all and ended up being, you know, getting a sub-30 score in Dream Team. So that the whole half-back line, Smets, you know, Guthrie, I mean, Duncan got a fair bit of the ball, but he burned it even worse with a 35-point differential between his Dream Team and Supercoach. And that, yeah, they need to go back to the drawing board with that structure. And I think Sanderson might have carved them right open, carved them open like a chicken. Molly, but anyway, of course, you know, and before anyone starts, to, yeah, of course, Hawthorn couldn't do that. I absolutely accept that. So yes, we'll move on to the Richmond Sydney game, Molly. Now, I was looking for an upgrade. I'm looking actually for a double upgrade in my Supercoach backline this week. I have Ellis, as a lot of people do, and of course, as a lot of people do, looking to get him out of the team this week. So he and Bug are both on the chopping block for me in my fantasy backline. I'm looking for around 13 back. And I had a look at the top seven scorers in Supercoach, Molly, and who do I find up there? I think it might have even actually been number five amongst only five backs in fantasy backs in the whole competition of Supercoach who are averaging more than 100. Alex Rance is in the top five. Now, I looked at his numbers this year, and again, it's a bit like with Jordan Lewis. His role has seen him score some big scores. It was actually, I suppose, the opposite of Jordan Lewis. His role this year has seen him score some big scores, but also some poor scores. But you add the numbers up at the end, and they're pretty decent in Dream Team. But it's really in Supercoach where the numbers have been much more flattened out. I mean, he's scored no less than 86 in any of his games, no more than 125. And you take those out, and it's all like 91 to 108. So the range of scores is a lot less. Now, you look at that and you think, well, that's not a huge amount of hundreds, sort of three and four. Well, I mean, look at last year, and I mean, he put in a lot of 60s last year while in Supercoach. Just the odd 120, a couple of 130s there towards the end of the season. A lot larger standard deviation last year, but he seems to have flattened out his performances. And I think the addition this year of Dylan Grimes seems to be the missing piece of that Richmond backline puzzle that has meant that Alex Rance is able to do the things he does and become a fantasy premium, Molly. So, I mean, it'd be very unique to go to Alex Rance, but can you see him keeping this up for the rest of the year?
I could see him keeping it up. I mean, he's had an interesting role this year with Richmond, and they've done a lot better, especially in Supercoach. I mean, if you think that they're going to do all right and fight for the eight, you'd think that they're going to be in some games late where he has a chance to have those, you know, good performances that get you the extra points late in games. So, you know, that's a good sign for him and something that he can work on and hopefully he'll be able to do some things in there. So I think he's got some relevance. Whether you're going to take the risk on him is another question. You know, he's on the rise. He's break even starting to get a bit high in Supercoach. So yeah, I mean, he's around 13, I think, by. So that might put you off with some other good round 13ers available, like the two Hawks, for instance, and Goddard and a few others. So that would be the only thing putting you off him, I would say.
Mm. He's almost fully priced. He's priced at about 95, and he's averaging about 100. So there's not a huge amount of value there, I suppose. But, I mean, I like the consistency of his scores. And, I mean, Supercoach in particular is a game where backs who you don't expect sort of, you know, bob up and finish in the top seven, and no one ever picks them because they just don't feel like they're natural fantasy players. But Rance has certainly had an excellent year, so I can't see. There's obviously a downside with every player, but certainly on his form, if his form holds and his fitness holds, I can't see any problem with Alex Rance sort of keeping those numbers up. On the Sydney side, a sort of a similar story. Now, Well, is it similar? I suppose it's a bit at the low end in terms of keepers. We're looking at a high-end keeper, a possible high-end keeper now, but we're looking here at Nick Malcheski. Now, of course, he, in the Hawthorn game 2 weeks ago, as you mentioned earlier, was subbed off at half-time with an injury. Actually, no, you were talking about someone else there, weren't you? But certainly, yes, as I said, so... 2 weeks ago, there was a bit of a leg injury, Malcheski, and was subbed off at halftime. Denton Lord assessed him for a 30-odd score in both competitions. But outside that game, he has not scored anything less than 74, which he scored on the weekend. And all these other scores have been in the 80s in Dream Team. In Supercoach, obviously a little bit more, because Supercoach, in terms of Supercoach, the Sydney side tends to do a little bit better. For reasons that have previously been gone through, but I suppose the question is, again, a bit like with Mitchell, this is probably about the lowest you're going to get Malcheski for, because that 30-odd has had a couple of weeks to go through the price, and it's going to be coming out of his rolling average as of this week. Now, the question, I think, with Malcheski, Molly, is it doesn't seem he's got a huge amount of upside, but also not a lot of downside as well. I watched his price. He was looking pretty poor all the way through that game against Richmond, but he dragged his price up in the last quarter or so, and like a good player should, and he showed me, because I watched him in that game expecting to have this conversation with you about him, because I had noticed that 30-odd rolling through his price. It looks like outside that, obviously, you know, if we discount that game, he is going to average sort of, you know, 85. But is that enough to be a keeper, Molly? This is the question. That might be enough to be sort of a B8, but is it enough to be a B7? Can he actually, you know, justify paying what is going to effectively be a price of about, what is that now, about 65 in Dream Team, about... about 75 in Supercoach for an average that is about sort of 10 to 15 above that. So he's still slightly underpriced, obviously, with that 32, you know, going through his record. Can you justify, I mean, so you're going to get a value for money by buying him right now, and it has to be this week, but can you justify paying, you know, that sort of money for a bloke who's not going to be top 7, probably not going to be anywhere near top 7? You're going to be losing 5 or 10 points every week, you know, or even more, against someone who is in the top 7, but can you see him being your B7?
The only way I could see it is if there's someone in the round 11 buys who you'd like to bring in after round 11, and therefore you could store him away and for the next 4 weeks in one of those temporary situations where he's got Melbourne and St Kilda and the Bulldogs and then Essendon, so not a bad run for 4 weeks. But apart from that, I think he's not enough reward in picking him up for the risk of him getting another injury for my liking.
Mm. I guess the main issue structural, or at least, you know, in terms of the players that people have, is, as I think someone mentioned on the chat, Tabs might have mentioned also, about Clark. A lot of people have Marty Clark penciled in for that B7 role already, and his average is probably going to be, it might be, you know, roughly similar to Malcheski. So a lot of people already have Clark, and they don't feel like they necessarily need to have two of those guys, because, you know, that'd mean one of those guys have to be B6, and that's clearly not acceptable. So, I mean, I guess for those people who've got Hargrove, they feel like he's a keeper now. The people who've got Lake, they feel like he's a keeper now. Clark, though, I think is that one who is always going to be that B7, and might even, you know, be a B8 if say Bug or Morris, you know, or whoever else you might have on that bench has a decent matchup that week, or is in a bit of form. So I guess that is the problem for people who are looking at Malcheski, is that you can't really fit him in because of all those, you know, blokes you've got in already to be, hopefully, keepers for your backline.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, I can't argue with that. I mean, it's as you say, having the guys that you have, there's better options. I mean, if you were looking for a round 12, unless it was to save money or whatever, because of, you know, Bug being gone or something like that, you're better off with a guy like Shaw or Heppel from Essendon. So, yeah, I can't see a lot of value in him.
Mm. All right. Well, I'll just try to make the because I knew that this was going to be the week to get him if you're going to get him, but now speaking of weeks to get him, Molly, the week has certainly gone to get Brent Stanton, and I guess the question with Brent Stanton, of course, he's backed up his 100 and whatever, some ridiculous
93.
Number. With another 140 and 160. I mean, this is West Coast is supposed to limit your scores, Molly. They're supposed to be the new Sydney, but obviously the tag role didn't work by whoever. Who was it they were trying? Was it Scott Selwood and
McGinnity?
That's right. Yeah, McGinnity just he failed, unfortunately.
Yeah, hashtag fail.
So yeah, I mean I mean, some people might have been planning to try and get him. Some people might still be trying to get him, trying to, you know, pay the absolute top dollar. Is it going to be? I mean, do you just watch him go and say, okay, well, you know, those few people who have him, good luck to them, but I'm not going to be one of them.
Yeah, he's a frustrating player in fantasy in that. In the past, he's been someone who's been so up and down, and I mean, this year he's been really consistent. I mean, apart from if you want to say, well, you know, he scored four scores of 140 or more, and then three under that. I mean, if you use 115 as the consistency, you know, for him, you know, he's had two scores under it, and one of them was almost 100 as well. I mean, he's like, there's a joke that Bill Cosby tells about where he used to run track, and he used to run behind this guy who had the weirdest running style that made him look like he was going to fall over. And Bill Cosby used to joke that, you know, you'd run around the whole track waiting for him to fall over so you could pass him, and he never did. And I think that's what we've been with Stanton. It's like we're sitting there waiting for him to start putting in, you know, his old bad performances, and it's just not happening. So I think if you've got him, you've done well, and if you haven't got him, you know, it's bravery time. Do you think he can continue scoring up, you know, 120 a game at least, or you know, more? Or do you think that at some point teams are going to stop letting him have all that free ball and start picking him up? I mean, they've still got a pretty handy draw to come, not a lot of dangers in it. Will teams start to pick him up? I mean, I guess the Tigers, they tag a bit, and GWS tag a bit, and Melbourne have Magna, who could do the tagging job, so, and then Sydney have Jack. So, I mean, there's four games now that he could get a tag, perceivedly, and it's just a matter of whether teams are going to do that or not and stop letting him have all that open ball.
Well, it's already been well documented this year about how premium mids against GWS don't do very well. It'd be fascinating to see McDonald on Stanton or Bug on Stanton to see if that actually came true, but maybe... Look, I suppose perhaps we're the wrong people to ask, Molly, because we're Hawthorn supporters, and thus one-eyed about this issue.
A painted.
However, the decision has to be made by fantasy coaches. Do they believe in Essendon? Now, this time last year, I do recall that Essendon also were on a big high and had a magnificent start to the season, and people were talking finals and top four and what have you, and that tended to peter away fairly quickly. After the first third of the season. Now, I mean, do we believe that there's something different this year? I don't think the personnel's changed all that much. They haven't really got a huge amount of influx of new talent. They might have had another pre-season. That might be the... Because I think part of the issue last year was that they hadn't... they didn't have the right conditioning. They needed to change their body type and all this sort of thing. So their stamina... You know, wasn't quite there, and that was the a big part of the reason they didn't run the season out very well. Do we believe that their fitness, strength, and conditioning people have done the job this year, and that everything that has been that was lacking in their bodies last year is going to be a tickety boo this year? I don't necessarily believe that you can turn the switch on that one in 1 year, but yeah, I mean, I still have this sneaking suspicion that. This top four positioning of Essendon is not quite where they're going to be at the end of the season. I could very much stand accused of being sour grapes on this one because Hawthorn's out the side of the eight, etc., etc. Absolutely, throw those tomatoes at me, and they may stick. Absolutely, especially at the end of the season. But I do still have a bit of wariness about Essendon. So, I don't think we can. I don't think it's probably, you know, it's productive for us to just, you know, debate it, Molly, because we're both hopelessly compromised, as we say. But anyway, to talk about another Essendon player now, David Zaharakis. Of course, we did talk about him in the preseason. I think we talked about him once already during the season. Obviously, there were concerns about him with the tendonitis in his knee. 3 tons in a row, Molly. Do these numbers you know, whisk away any talk of degenerative knee conditions? Can we rely on him for that sort of production week on week?
Yeah, I mean, he was amongst the midfield forwards who we all looked at the start of the season and probably took two or three in. So, yeah, I mean, he's getting to the point where we thought he would be. And having a look at his scores, I mean, apart from the 247 and 68 against Gold Coast and Carlton, he's had a great year. I mean, 91 and above. No big hundreds that you'd like to see, but no smaller scores than those two. So,
two of those last hundreds have come against Collingwood and the Eagles, so of course everyone rates. So those are very, very nice scores.
Yeah, so that's absolutely right. So, you know, I think there's a lot of merit in him at the moment, and you know, he's he's 1 week off being at the top of the bottom of the roller coaster. You missed out because you should have got him last week, but yeah, no, he's looking fine. I can see him having a good year here on in.
All right, on the West Coast side of that game, Molly, a couple of kids who are on the bubble this week. Jacob Brennan, who is on the extended bench. I don't see him surviving the cut on Friday. I think he was only in for the time that Will Schofield was out of that side. Will Schofield has been named on the back pocket. I see Brennan as going back to the waffles. See you later, son. Well, you know, go work on your game. Thanks, you know, thanks for the memories for those two games. We'll see you back here when you've had a bit more experience. I suppose the other person, the other kid, of course, is Scott Lysett, who he's pretty much, you know, when we talk about the you know, unlocking the mystery of the bye rounds, Molly, he was pretty much the gatekeeper, and we were looking for a keymaster, and and yeah, the keymaster, of course, was John Worsfold, and all Worsfold needed to do was pick Scott Lysett through the bye period, and then the word would be Zool. Everyone would bow down to Zool because all of our prayers would be answered as far as the bye rounds are concerned. Sadly, of course, Lysett has of course been dropped this week. Even past the extended bench, so we're not going to have any Ghostbusters. Not going to have any what was it?
Ghostbusters.
We're not going to have any really large Stay Puff Marshmallow Men walking the streets of Melbourne. Sadly,
large
but
donut men though, maybe.
Yes, well, possibly. So that particular scenario doesn't look like coming to pass, but. But anyway, so do you agree with my assessment on those two, that we're not going to, you know, that neither of those two are going to be fantasy relevant?
Nah. Hey, goodbye to both of them, I think. And yeah, I don't, apart from if they've got a lot of injuries or when they come up against teams like Gold Coast, and I think they've already played GWS, so we're not going to see them again. No, they're gone.
All right. Now, speaking of cultural references, let us get on to the Brisbane Collingwood game, Molly, because your little mate, the great Zorko. He has made his debut, his triumphant debut, off the subs bench for a magnificent 26 in Dream Team and 18 in Supercoach, on in the third quarter for Pierce Hanley, 8 disposals and 2 tackles. Now, as far as Zorko goes, Molly, very, very much a heralded fantasy rookie, and of course the news came through today, I think it was, that Todd Banfield is going to be out for 6 matches with some sort of injury. It wasn't interesting enough for me to remember exactly what the injury was, but let us be assured that it is a 6-week injury. Now, look at the small forward brigade down there at Brisbane. I did notice, in addition to Pollock and now of course Zorko, who of course is had previously been teaming up with Banfield, in that team. Now, they've added in Rowan Barwick. Barwick? Buick. Buick, of course. Buick. How could I forget the name Buick, speaking of Essendon, Molly? Of course, so was it his father or his uncle was the Darren Buick? I can't remember.
I think it was his uncle.
Uncle, yeah, I think it was uncle. So, yes, a couple of rangers down there. One ranger replacing another, of course. Banfield being replaced by Buick in that side. Now, even if Zorko was replacing Banfield, which I'm not necessarily sure he's going to, or if he was working with Pollock, I can't see much in the way of fantasy production out of any of those players, because looking at the numbers, I can't see many scores from any of them above about 50 or 55 for the whole of the season. And I blame the forward structure of the Lions for that, and it's not necessarily due to the good or bad play of those kids. A, there's very few inside 50s, and B, there's not enough contests being provided by the likes of Brown and Maguire, who is not a forward. Kinesis hasn't been named previously, and you know he's probably going to take a while to get into the game. You know, Polkinghorne hasn't, you know, obviously he's not really tall enough to provide, you know, the huge packs that these crummers require. I can't see a whole lot of fantasy production coming out of being a small forward for Brisbane, especially as, you know, the season wears on and Brisbane keeps on losing, as they are tending to do now. So where do you see Zorko's... I mean, his job security might be okay now, but where do you see his scoring actually being?
He didn't put a lot of points. He put up 26 points in under, you know, in just over a quarter, so that's okay. But, I mean, it's hard to say. I didn't really see a lot of him in the preseason. He had great raps. But, you know, I want to see what he does. So, I mean, I'd like another week to look at him, definitely. And then, you know, it's still going to be doubtful you'd bring him in with a guy with a, I think it's a round 11 bye.
Yeah.
Makes it tricky. We really want to get, you know, around 12 or around 13 bye in there. So, you know, around 13 would be ideal probably, I think. But, yeah, no, I don't like him at the moment, but I want to see him again for another week. And against an easy opponent in GWS, that if he's going to score well, he should score well this week.
I think the Zorko story sort of impresses upon me, and it has impressed upon a couple of other coaches I've seen this week, is that the strategy now is to load up on cash and try and upgrade as much as possible through the buys, not downgrade, because I'm not sure there's going to be a huge amount of options for downgrading. Zorko seems like he's going to play now, so you can't wait for him. You know, Sumner is off this week. So maybe about be able to wait for him as a forward. I'm not sure there's going to be a huge amount of options when the time comes. But yes, it's going to be very, very tricky to try to downgrade to playing rookies from the round 11 stocks. So unfortunately, Zorko is not going to be one of those. Okay, so on the Collingwood side now, these couple of players we're going to talk about do come from a question we had in the pre-show from the chat. Alan Dydak obviously came back first week, you know, obviously not on the bubble yet, so we don't need to make a decision about him quite yet. 110 in that game. 70 in Supercoach, which is obviously a bit of a worry, but he will also be joined by Dale Thomas this week in the Collingwood side. And the question came through, what is this going to do, Dydak and Thomas coming back into that side, to the scoring of the likes of Beams and Sidebottom? Now, I don't think it's a whole lot, because I think their role is now replacing Ball, and to a lesser extent maybe Johnson. So I think I don't necessarily see that as being you know, a hurt on their scoring. Maybe they might not score 120s, they might score 115s or 110s, but I think they're still going to be scoring pretty freely. So, I mean, do you see the Beams and Sidebottom being hurt by the reintroduction of Dydak and Thomas? I mean, in game, I mean, obviously that was a bit of a champagne footy game, that one against Brisbane. But when they come up against a formidable side, do you see Beams or Sidebottom, you know, being, you know, put on the back burner, and the likes of Thomas and Dydak stepping up?
I think they'll be fine. The two Beams and Cybottom will be fine. Their scoring will be fine. I think Didact's an interesting one in himself, but I haven't got confidence in him, and especially with that 110, the first week's going to bump up his price artificially. I don't think he'll get that high all the way through. And Thomas, I mean, I think Thomas was, before he got injured, was playing off the back flank, almost playing the Leon Davis role. So, you know, that's not going to affect Sidebottom and Beams, other than maybe they'll get better ball out of that back line. So, yeah, I can't see this affecting them, those two guys, too badly at all.
The only thing I could see them affecting is if Dale Thomas wore a wig, like a big blonde wig, because I think that he's cutting his hair off has really ruined his game, from what I can see. So that's not really
But I mean, hey, maybe that was part of the injury, and that's why you need to take so long off.
Although, if he did wear a wig, he'd start to look like that silly comedian. What was his name? Strawny.
Strawny!
That wouldn't be great news. All right, now we'll move on to the North Melbourne Bulldogs game, Molly. Now, a small amount of coaches would have enjoyed the work of Liam Anthony in the start of the season, because he was slightly underpriced coming off, was it injury last year? He only played 13 games last year for an average of 76, and he's so far averaged 96 this year. So, in terms of value for money, you've been getting a lot of bang out of your buck from Anthony. So it's a similar rise from 70 to 91 as Supercoach, but he's been dropped on form this week after topping the Dream Team of Supercoach numbers. Molly, how do you explain that? What's going on there?
Maybe it's the ghost of who was their former coach? Dean...
Dean Fantasy Antichrist Laidley, yes.
Yes. So maybe it's his ghost hanging around the hallways of Arden Street or whatever it's called these days. But, yeah, I mean, I think the thought was that they needed to make an example of someone, and unfortunately he was the one who was made example of. I haven't looked at their side if he's... when do they play? Whether he's in the emergencies, because sometimes coaches play that little trick. Oh yes, we're going to make wholesale changes, then make one change, and then bring him back in anyway. Oh, because someone got hurt. But no, he's not there. So, you know, I think they're just a bit like Tom Couch. There's just something about his game he wasn't happy with. How hard he was, how well he used the ball, or the like. It just wasn't up to scratch.
He's been couched.
Yes,
indeed. I think Kaczynski might have done that before the Hawthorn game. They might have done that before the St Kilda Hawthorn game. I remember that happening. Yes, that is a definite trick by coaches. But yes, poor old Mr Scott. Because I always forget which Scott it is. Is it Brad or Chris?
Brad.
Yes, he's not having a good time down there with trying to figure out how to work both, you know, Goldstein and McIntosh and Petrie into that game.
Well, they found a way to work it out this week.
Yeah, getting McIntosh to kick some bloke in the net in the back and injure himself. But it was handy for Hamish McIntosh, because he would have busted his PCL, but he'd already busted it. So all he did was, you know, make all the bits of the you know, around the knee sore where he would have had a PCL. It was quite good work that, I thought. But anyway. And the other player we need to talk about from North Melbourne this week, of course, is Cameron Delaney, who was on the bubble this week. He is the bubble boy with the lowest break-even of minus 42 in Dream Team and minus 46 in Supercoach. Now, Brad Scott was on the couch this week, and he was asked about Lockie Hansen. And the presence of Lockie Hansen is probably the reason why I wouldn't be investing in Cameron Delaney, because... I don't think that backline, or I'm not sure that many parts of that side are set in terms of personnel, Molly. I see players who probably should be having competition from below. Maybe it's just that there's not enough competition from their VFL side, or I think they've got two VFL sides, haven't they? North Melbourne, they've got two affiliations.
I'm not sure if they still do, but they used to.
They used to.
Werribee, wasn't it?
Yeah.
North Melbourne, North Ballarat.
That's it. So, I guess the question is, I mean, job security for me is the issue with Delaney. I mean, he's a bench back at best, I think. But even in that role, I mean, if you're just looking for a warm body, and maybe, you know, you might have missed out, and thankfully, on someone like a Nathan Brown. I think if you're looking for someone this week, it'd be more like a bloke like Spur, who we'll talk about presently. than a Delaney. I feel like, you know, if you're looking for some, I mean, yeah, just for so many reasons, I would much rather Spur over Delaney at this stage.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to make that trade, that's the one you'd probably be looking at. I mean, Spur, he started on the bench in the first one, but, you know, he put a good performance up last week, and it's just a matter of if he can hold that position to whether he'll be a better option than Delaney. So, yeah, as you say, Hansen on the radar, upheaval at the Ruse.
And there was a bloke, of course, you mentioned in the Peterson. He's also Peterson, in and out of that side, so... I don't see a lot of job security by a lot of those kids in that side, so especially the taller ones. So, I mean, Brad Scott does seem to have a bit of a penchant for turning backs into forwards and forwards into backs and making them making them all able to switch. So I'm not sure whether Delaney has that in his bow, but, you know, certainly he has been using Peterson in that role, and, of course... Yeah, Tarrant has been doing that as well recently, of course, as well. Who did he play in that game? I'm not sure. I think he might have been. Actually, Tarrant's been injured, I believe.
Yeah, he's coming back by the VFL, I believe.
Yeah, so look, the job security for Delaney, very, very questionable. Apart from the fact that his scoring is a bit questionable as well. So I'll just know on that one. On the Bulldogs side, of course, Molly, those long suffering Tory Dixon owners. Got a big reward for hanging out so long with a big ton in both competitions, and those of us who made the decision to, you know, who had the decision about 3 or 4 weeks ago, do I trade out Dixon or Aaron Hall? Well, if you decided to trade out Dixon and keep Hall, you made the wrong decision, and I think I might have been one of those. So I got burned on that one. So so suddenly Tory Dixon has just gone dicks off, Molly, and he is. He looks like he has got a place in that team all the way through the buys. So I guess the question is, if he hadn't got on that boat beforehand, is it too late? Because he has had... he's only just come off the bubble. He rose 40 grand in Dream Team and 50 grand in Supercoach. But has a break-even of well under a zero in both competitions. And the reason for that, of course, is that... his first two games and the first two rounds were nothing to write home about, but do you believe the Tory Dixon we saw in that game, or do you think he's going to revert back to that the Eagles and the Crows performances where he came off the subs bench and did nothing? I feel like that was his breakout game, and the Dogs are just so they're just so crying out for that sort of effort in their forward line that. He's almost got a job not only through the bye rounds, but for the rest of the game based on that, rest of the year based on that performance.
Yeah, if he can keep up anything like that, he'll maintain his spot. He's the sort of guy the Western Bulldogs need. They've troubled to score up forward at present, so you know he's the sort of guy they need. A guy who's going to cause contests and you know. He's that mid-sized forward that can mark and can row, so he's exactly what they needed.
In some ways, it's unfortunate that he's a round 11 buy forward, because, I mean, if you're looking for instance, a downgrade target from someone like a Paul Pleasure, unfortunately, it's not going to help your buy situation. So, in some circumstances, that might be a good thing, but I can imagine in a lot of other circumstances, it wouldn't be a good thing. So, but yeah, certainly for those, that's a bonus for those who've been keeping him this long. And we can only hope on behalf of all of us Aaron Hall owners, that whatever it is that is keeping Aaron Hall from that side, I'm not sure what it is at this point. I haven't heard him on the injury report. I haven't heard any talk of disciplinary actions or, you know, getting him in front of the selection committee or the leadership group, or I don't know. Something's going on down there at the Gold Coast, and we don't know what it is, and Aaron Hall's not getting a game. Perhaps he's been... I think actually, Molly, the key apparently is to actually start sleeping with the daughter of the coach, as of course Dylan Scheel has been doing. So maybe that's what Aaron Hall and Tom Couch need to do. They need to find, like, Tom Couch needs to go look up the number of Mark Neal's daughter. I presume that hopefully she's of the right age, and or some close female relative of the right age. and do the and you know do what do the team thing, you know, to take one
take
for the
one
team.
For the team.
Indeed, yes. All right. Well, so that was a highly highly questionable.
I was letting yourself paint yourself into that corner.
Very, and, very much so.
You very well did.
Painting myself into a corner like that got you video. Yes, very much so. All right. Now, look, we've touched on it just previously, but there's Lee Spur. Now, of course, came off the subs bench in the first game for not much. With very little game time, and of course that was against the Gold Coast. But in that Port game, got a full game and 20 possessions with 6 marks, and a very respectable, almost start-worthy score of 65 in Dream Team and 70 in Supercoach. So we know from some of the comments of Ross Lyon at his post match presses that he does like Lee Spur. So if you believe the coach, his job security is pretty good. But this is Ross Lyon we're talking about, Molly. Historically, yes. he is a killer of fantasy rookies. Do you trust him?
Not greatly.
No.
No.
I mean, all we need to do is trust him through the buys. We don't necessarily need to trust him after that. But can you even trust him that far?
No, not really. You don't know. I think he's got a chance to hang on, but I mean, it's just a matter of who's coming back. I'm not sure who that is.
Well, Subin is the one who has been playing in the waffle, and so I mean, the fact that Spur is playing now and Subin is fit and playing tells me that at least he's got enough job security to actually keep Subin out. Now, there has been some reports of Subin playing quote-unquote well in the waffle, although those are conflicting reports. But, I mean, the fact that Spur is playing now and, you know, the coach is talking him up, those are excellent signs. But again, this is the coaches lie, Molly. We've learnt this over many, many years. Coaches lie. Fantasy analysts do not lie, but coaches do. So, I'm happy that my structure has meant that I don't necessarily have to rely on Spur, but that score in that game against Port is very, very tasty, very tempting. I've been looking at doing that double upgrade, Bargain Ellis in Supercoach this week, and I have enough money to do the double upgrade, but and some people might be in the same boat this week. But the question for me is, do I do that double upgrade or do I save and then go to Ablett next week from one of my giants in the centres. So yeah, I'd imagine there'd be a fair few other coaches in that boat, and Spur would be obviously the other one you'd need to downgrade to in the backs to make that possible to fund an Ablett upgrade. So I'm not sure you can rely on Spur to the extent that you relied on a bug. I don't think Spur's ceiling is as high as Bugs. We look at B7s and B8s and what their sort of scoring range would be. In best case scenario, Spur does have job security and does play through. Do you see him scoring enough to be a B7, or is it just B8 numbers that you're looking at? Because I think it's probably B8 numbers.
Yeah, no, definitely B8. I mean, he might put the odd big game in, but he's going to be at the B8 sort of level.
Mm, yes. All right, we'll move on to the other side of that game, of course, which was, of course, Port Adelaide. Now, I've been putting this off for a while now, Molly, but it has come to my attention. This is, again, a bit of a Supercoach special, this question, because I'm not sure we can say the same in Dream Team about this player than we can in Supercoach, because Troy Chaplin, you look at his Dream Team numbers, he's averaging 74 in Dream Team, 91 in Supercoach. So, sorry, no, 94, I should say, in Supercoach. Now, this is normally an indicator of a good player, Molly, so please, hold my hand and tell me this is not true, that Troy Chaplin is actually a good player. He's certainly, you look structurally at that Port back line. Carlisle's been playing. Trengo has been playing. I'm not sure he's been playing all that well, but he's been playing. He's been standing there. He's not been making a huge amount. Well, he's been making a lot of mistakes. Let's be honest, Trengo. But he's been allowing Chaplin to play the role that he has been accustomed to. So maybe I went a bit early on this um, on this whole Troy Chaplin business. Of course, those who don't know what I'm talking about, I actually owned Troy Chaplin in Dream Team last year and got horribly burned. I have the scars to prove it. So I'm possibly a bit of a the wrong person to ask this question. So I'll ask it to you, Molly. Troy Chaplin is scoring like a Supercoach premium at the moment. Can you see him doing that for the rest of the season, or is he going to burn anyone who tries to get him in now, as he burned me at about this stage last year?
Yeah, no, I don't like it myself. I would not be too confident in his performances week to week to start picking him up. You know, he's had that difference between his DT and his super coach throughout his career, pretty much. So I don't think you're getting a lot of the value that you think you might be getting picking him in. So no, I would just avoid him.
Just looking at his price is 480 in Supercoach, so that's about what. Just using the general rule of multiplying it by about 50, so that's about 96. So he actually, yeah, he's probably a little bit overpriced with that range. Although Supercoach is a bit different, of course, because they use a slightly higher magic number. But yes, so yeah, I'm not sure he's usually underpriced at this stage. But I look at his numbers, and yeah, standard deviation is also a bit of an issue with my ex-boy Chaplin. 121 is highest, and a couple of 70s in there as well. So that's not very good either. So, All right, well, I had to do that just to get it out of my system, Molly. So let's quickly bypass talking about anyone else from Port Adelaide for the rest of the week. And move on to the Monday night game. Now, three St Kilda players are on the bubble this week who are priced at or around rookie prices. I speak here of Ahmed Saad, Aaron Sipos, and Bo Wilkes. Now, Wilkes has been wearing vests of a red colour both weeks, I believe, and Sipos wore the green in this one. I'm not sure whether he wore it the previous... I think he might have worn it the previous time as well. He was certainly on in the fourth quarter in that game. No, he didn't. Sipos did not wear the vest last week. So, nevertheless, I can't see a huge amount of value in either Sipos or Wilkes. Saad is the only possible one, you know, because I'm not sure he has actually been wearing the vest either.
He wore it first week.
He was. He did, actually. But even not wearing the vest this week, I'm still only 42. Now, my knock on Saad in the preseason was that he played too high and his scoring was not high enough even when he got full games. And certainly that Carlton game where, you know, this is the sort of game where a player like Saad, if he was a natural DT-er, would have scored 70. Because, I mean, you look at a player like Malera, who is a natural DT-er, and he did score 70 in that game. I'd much rather have a player like Malera than Saad. This is for fantasy purposes only. I'm sure Saad's a lovely player, and he kicked a fantastic goal. You know, like he dodged around three blues and kicked on his right, but it was a fantastic goal, individual goal. Absolutely, you know, he's going to be a fine player for St Kilda, not for fantasy purposes, I feel. So I am glad I'm not looking for someone in the fantasy forward line this week, because if these three are the ones I've had to choose from, I'm not sure I like any of them, Molly.
No, I agree. I mean, I think each one of them has shown at different times good ability, but not from a fantasy sense. So they just don't have the relevance in fantasy at the moment. Although Saad threatens to. He looks great, but just doesn't score enough.
I feel, in fantasy terms, he's a bit like Jacob Townsend at the other end, in the back line. Now, Townsend has been scoring like Saad, you know, he's been scoring those 40s-odd, obviously like Saad did in that game. Although I noticed his Supercoach was pretty high, Saad. So, now, does that Supercoach score for Saad in that game, you know, change any of your thinking, or was it just maybe that he might have got a boost for a particular goal that was particularly, you know, relevant to the outcome of the game, and that's a bit of a one-off for him?
Yeah, I don't know that that that's a big factor to take in for me. Mm. I think.
Yeah, so anyway, so I mean, like with, as I was saying, so with Townsend, he was sort of motoring along at sort of 40s and not earning much cash at all. And then, of course, this week he's jagged a big 80 because he managed to be fairly in what's the non-destructive. He managed to play a big role in the in one or two of the key plays at the end of the game, which won the game for the Giants, and he's pulled out an 80 as well, which is going to eventually make his price, you know, spike up. You know, even if he keeps on scoring 80s now, it'll roll through his price a couple more weeks, and he'll turn out to be a decent cash cow. So Saad might end up doing that, but you know, in the meantime, his scores are not going to be startable. So all the way through that bye period, it's going to be a bit of a stretch for to be playing Saad, unfortunately. Yeah. It'll be like eating another donut anyway, pretty much.
Yes, I agree.
Now, to round out the round review, of course, from Carlton, I suppose, the player we've got to talk about, Molly, is Mark Murphy. Now, is it the case that coaches, a bit like what we're talking about with Geelong, they're going to look at Carlton and say, right, well, the way to beat Carlton is not to tag Chris Judd. Let him run. We'll tag not only Murphy but also Simpson, because those two were the ones who had the hard tagging roles put on them, and Carlton got beaten. So is this going to happen every week? I mean, Murphy did get tagged a lot last year, but for whatever reason, in the last couple of games he has got tagged, he hasn't coped with it this year. So is it just an anomaly, or is there something that is going to scare away, or should scare away, fantasy coaches from bringing Murphy in because for a couple of weeks in a row he's struggled with a tag?
Well, I mean, his struggle against the Giants was 94, but yeah, this week against the Saints it wasn't good. He just couldn't get into the game, so I'm not sure that the teams have enough, there's enough good taggers around to do the job on him, so
Let's just figure out who he's going to get in the next sort of little bit. So maybe in the Crows game. Yeah, I'm not sure they tag a lot in midfield. I mean, they might put a Doughty on him, or I could certainly see a Doughty going with him. In the old days, they would have sent Riley probably. I'm not sure they do midfield tagging roles, those two, either at this stage. I'm not sure the Crows do a whole lot of midfield tagging. Magna on Murphy in round 9 would be very interesting. I could see that, definitely. Kane Corns on Murphy, I could see that being a bit of a shootout in round 10. The Geelong, Taylor Hunt on Murphy, I don't think that's a worry for Murphy. And then McGinnity or the Adam Selwood might have come back by that stage in round 12 against him. There are some out there that are dangerous, but yeah, you're probably right. I mean, and after the bye, you know, Hawthorn, I mean, Sewell doesn't do a hard tagging role. No. The Pies don't tend to tag hard anymore. I mean, Wellingham sort of freewheels these days, doesn't really do hard tags. I don't think he has anyone to fear from North necessarily. Greenwood is not in form and is barely in the side at this stage. So yes, you're probably right. Maybe he's just gone through a few hard taggers. I mean, look, let's be honest. As I think we talked about before, James McDonald's a pretty good tagger. And you know, certainly,
so is Jones.
And so is Jones, obviously. So yes, maybe that's just a temporary thing. So, but yes, certainly it's a bit of an issue for us people who are looking at getting in a round 13 premium mid this in the next couple of weeks. All right, well, that concludes the round review.
Yes.
And yes, the first show brought to you by the Cadbury Boost Bar. I'm not going to go through the whole spiel again. Indeed, yes. Well, I'll have to get you another replacement bar for the one that your youngest consumed.
Yes, I'll hide it better this time.
Indeed, yes. Just pretend it's an Easter egg or something. But then again, they're probably good at finding Easter eggs, aren't they?
I'll hide it in some broccoli.
Mm. All right, that'll be it for us for this week, and we shall wish you guys, all the girls and girls, all luck for the forthcoming week, and hopefully all of your players score at least 100.
Okay, see you guys.
Yeah.